Thank you for downloading this episode of our podcast.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast for Solomon Staircase Masonic Lodge number 357, where we talk about all things related with Freemasonry, including Hermetic teachings, philosophy, reason, spirituality, and much more. We're located in Buena Park, Southern California. Tune in as we continue to update our podcast with informative talks and articles for Masons worldwide and those who would like to inquire within.
The noble character. We as Freemasons are to be reminded of our duties we owe to our Creator, our neighbors, our nation, to each other, and wherever we may be called upon to serve in some role, often unforeseen and unrewarded. To be aware of such duties ought to be universally understood, but we know such is not the case. There are, however, many individuals who go above and beyond in serving others, to ensure the right things are done in the right way, and also to bring a helping, caring heart with helping hands into circumstances only our Creator may know of. Freemasonry is many things to each individual Mason, where our teachings and fraternal connection can answer a need of some kind or provide an avenue for personal achievement. Certainly, close and personal social contact is just as important as thinking seriously about what is important in human affairs, such as the practice of faith, or the importance of practicing the virtues, and especially upholding what constitutes an exceptional and trustworthy character. It is the noble character, having the same name as a Freemason, who is near the summit of his interior work, who has not only embraced and pursued the highest ideals we stand for, but has also chosen to care for the things that matter, like being merciful and compassionate, like showing kindness in difficulty, also being giving and friendly toward all, especially for those who are suffering, and even choosing to not look away, but to speak up when corruption finds its way into ordinary life. This, my brothers, is what we take with us, everywhere and beyond. So mote it be. John McCarger, Hiram Ward, Master. From the West, the noble character. The inertia of rest and inertia of motion aren't friends. An individual keeps moving to reap the outcome of each passing moment of time noted as an event. Such a pattern of events forms a tapestry called life. Alas, we can't rewind it or unwind it, only learn from it to save and pass on as experience. Steering the vehicles is the only way to get to your destination on time without collision. So is a life full of opinions, faiths, and temperaments yearning for permanent joy that fizzles in the moments of retreat. The personality changes with the change of environment, but what comes out repeatedly is a noble character that results in a peaceful attitude towards life. The purity of solitude is a noble character. Freemasonry, through its various rituals, repeatedly performs an act of innocent expression on a persona that caves in the darkness of the mind and gives it a purity of character. This rare personality trait is so noble in a depiction that let the solitude retain its purity with the lessons from the rituals and understanding thereof. Only if I knew how to find thee, though I kept looking for thou. Temperance allows us to put on reins and tape our inner steeds so that we may ultimately realize the control of passions. Fortitude allows us to undergo an expedient experience that makes us tough. Prudence teaches us to stabilize our conduct, which results in repeated following of logic and reason. Justice lends us a superiority to adhere to such discipline that brings civility into our lives. Freemasonry possesses this strength of character that mindfully and fervently spreads a peaceful aura of self-determination and steers in chosen direction without collisions of conflicting thoughts. Such purity of solitude is the noble character that all men, regardless of social status, seek zealously and strive to be good at the art and understanding of the philosophy of life. Suffering in the path of learning perseveres the noble character that leads to hope. The solitude that surrounds the purity of mind leads a true Freemason to transition into peace. Monarchs exchange the scepter for the trowel, looking to build the same noble character. Shivam Sharma, Hiram Award, Senior Warden. Editor's Note: The Noble Character. As I was talking to a prospect recently at my new lodge in Nevada, I heard the same thing from him that I've heard from many Masons. When I asked him what got him interested in Masonry, he told me that his father and grandfather were both Masons, and two of the finest men he had ever met. That got me to thinking, and it turns out that all of the most noble men I know are either Masons or would well qualify to be one. We take good men and make them better. We've all heard that. We've probably said it more than once. But what does it mean? I think we will each have our own interpretation, but here is mine. To be a Mason, there are several things you need to be and need to do. In California, you need to be a male, have a belief in a higher power, and be over 18. That's to even consider being a Mason. You have to pass a background check. Why? Because we want to ensure that the men who are requesting to join are of good moral standing. There are many things you can have on your record that will not prevent you from moving forward. But there are things that fall under the category of moral turpitude that will immediately stop the process. What exactly is this moral turpitude? Well, according to Cornell, it is a phrase that describes wicked, deviant behavior constituting an immoral, unethical, or unjust departure from ordinary social standards such that it would shock a community. And can't we all agree that those are not the people we necessarily want to be around? So now, our good man, looking to be better, has passed this portion. Next, he is visited by three members of the lodge who will interview him, preferably with his significant other present if he has one, and find more about him, why he wants to join the lodge, if he is able to take care of himself and his family, what he is looking for by joining, and several other topics. In Nevada, a couple of those questions are whether you have a gambling problem or are addicted to anything such as alcohol or drugs. So once you get through all of these gates, your information is presented to the lodge, and an anonymous ballot is then held by the members as to whether you should be allowed to join. If the ballot is good, you are then notified and scheduled to start the process. So now we are pretty sure we have a good man entering our ranks. Now to make him a better man, better husband, better father, etc. This all starts by being around men who are constantly trying to do the same thing. None of us are perfect. We are all synonymous with that rough stone that is still in need of knocking off some of the rough portions so it will fit perfectly in that moral edifice we are building. Does it mean Masons don't make mistakes? Of course not. We are human, and we are always trying to be better. And by being around other men with that same drive, it helps you to also become better. As in many areas of your life, you tend to emulate those you spend your time with. So when you spend time with men trying to better themselves, you tend to do the same. So in a way, that statement is not 100% accurate. It is not that we take good men and make them better, but we take good men and give them an environment where they can grow and become better. We give them lessons on life in the form of symbols and allegories where they take from it what is meaningful. We surround them with men trying to be better themselves. We admit them to a brotherhood that has been around for hundreds of years because it does the right things. In this way, we help to further reveal the noble character of the man you call your father, your husband, your son, your uncle, your grandfather, etc. Aaron Reddick, editor. On this following article, it's interesting. I don't have an author or a website or anything noted where it came from, which is not typical. But let's share it anyways. We're not making any money off this, and hopefully somebody recognizes it and can let us know so we can give the author due credit. Stellar Theology and Masonic Astronomy, the circle embordered by two parallel lines. In every lodge may be seen a certain point within a circle embordered by two parallel lines. Have Masons lost the true meaning of this emblem? Answer, they have. Question, what does this emblem signify? Answer, the astronomical signification of this emblem is so apparent that it seems to have forced itself upon the attention of many intelligent Masons. Dr. Oliver, in his dictionary, says, "The symbol of a point within a circle has sometimes been invested with an astronomical reference. Thus it is said that the point in the circle represents the Supreme Being. The circle indicates the annual circuit of the sun, and the parallel lines mark out the solstices, within which that circuit is limited. And they deduce from this hypothesis this corollary, that the Mason, by subjecting himself to due bounds, in imitation of that glorious luminary, will not wander from the path of duty." This explanation is concurred in by Dr. Mackey, notwithstanding his disapproval of the astronomical theory. It is, however, far more reasonable than the explanation given in the lecture appertaining to this degree, but is not in all respects correct. It is true that the circle represents the ecliptic or annual path of the sun, but the point within the circle does not represent the Supreme Being, but the earth, around which, as a center, the sun appears to annually revolve among the stars of the zodiac. The parallel lines are the tropics of Cancer and Capricorn. The summer solstice is on the 21st of June, and the winter solstice is on the 21st of December. These are the celestial points, always marked by two parallel lines representing the tropics, as may be seen on any terrestrial globe or map. These two dates, as we have remarked in the answer to the previous question, have been said to be the respective birthdays of St. John the Baptist and St. John the Evangelist, but there is no authentic history to substantiate this assertion. The sun's circuit among the stars is limited and defined by the tropics. When, in June, he reaches the Tropic of Cancer and attains his greatest northern declination, he goes no further north, but turns and begins to approach the south. He reaches his greatest southern declination in December at the other tropic, which terminates his southern progress. For he there again turns about, and once more journeys toward the north. Upon the integrity of the sun's movement, in this particular, depend all the order and regularity of the seasons. Should the sun not retrograde at the summer solstice, the heat would grow intolerable, and both vegetable and animal existence not only become impossible from that cause, but the melting of the polar snows and ice would produce another deluge. If the sun, on the contrary, turned not back at the winter solstice, eternal winter would reign in all the lands north of the equator, and a perpetual glacial era extinguish all life and vegetation. The foregoing cut is without question the most ancient and proper method of exhibiting the emblem of a circle embordered by two parallel lines. The circle, in order to correspond with our modern ideas of the points of the compass, should be turned about so that the two parallel lines would be in a horizontal and not in a perpendicular position. The Tropic of Cancer would then be at the north, and the Tropic of Capricorn at the south, in accordance with our custom of devoting the top of any map or draft to the north and the lower part to the south. The Hebrews, however, and other ancient Oriental nations, when speaking of the four quarters of the heavens, always supposed the spectator to be looking east toward the rising sun, and in their language, before meant east and behind west, the right hand south and to the left north, as for instance the Hebrew word kedem means not only before but also east. The same custom as to the points of the compass prevailed with the Arabians, who called the north shamal, a word meaning at the left. This ancient custom fully accounts for the fact that in this emblem the two lines representing the tropics are placed in a perpendicular and not a horizontal position. The further fact that in some of the Indian cave temples the circle is found, actually inscribed with the signs of the zodiac, make the correctness of the foregoing explanation certain. The absurdity of supposing that the operative masons of the Middle Ages invented this emblem in connection with their art is plain. Question: of what does this emblem admonish us? Answer: as the sun, in his annual course around the circle of the ecliptic, perpetually performs his revolution with regularity and certainty, never straying beyond the tropical points, but always returning in due season to beautify, adorn, and fructify the earth, so ought we all to govern our actions with equal certainty and regularity, adorning our lives with wisdom and virtue, and making our years fruitful of good deeds, never suffering our passions to lead us beyond the boundary line of good conduct or the points of reason. For while we keep ourselves thus circumscribed, it is impossible for us to materially err. Stoicism and Freemasonry, the Four Cardinal Virtues. Within the last 7 years since I was raised as Master Mason, I learned a great deal about the important lessons embedded in all our lectures, whether it be the Steward's Lectures, the Allegory of the Middle Chamber, or the Charges. These were written and are part of the rituals for a reason, treated as a guideline to becoming a better person. At least that's how I took it. As someone who began practicing the philosophy of Stoicism, I cannot help but reflect upon all the many things I've learned about Freemasonry and draw some similarities. For instance, I'm sure we all know of the four cardinal virtues that every Mason to this day attempts to perfect in their walk of life. They are fortitude, prudence, temperance, and justice. While in Stoicism, the cardinal virtues are wisdom, justice, courage, and temperance. Fortitude. For Masons, fortitude is that noble and steady purpose of the mind, or courage in the face of pain or adversity. It is how we build our character, improve our moral fiber, and strengthen our minds to manage the challenges of life. This is similar to courage in Stoicism. It teaches us courage to face misfortune, courage to realize our own mortality, and courage to risk oneself for the sake of their fellow man. Stoicism teaches us courage to hold our principles and courage to speak your mind and insist on truth. Prudence. For Masons, prudence enables us to regulate our lives and actions agreeably to the dictates of reason. Simply, it is a practice of good judgment, common sense, and the wisdom we acquire in our journey through life. Prudence is essentially the most exalted object that demands every Mason's special attention, for it is the rule that governs all virtues. This is remarkably similar to Stoics' virtue of wisdom. The Stoics believe that virtue is good and leads to happiness, while vices pull us further from it. Wisdom is simply our ability to know what is what, and in knowing, we can guide our actions more deliberately. Temperance. For Masons, temperance is that due restraint upon our affections and passions, and frees the mind from the allurement of all the vices and superfluities of life. When practiced and perfected, we will be able to abstain from all actions that may impair our faculties and perceptions. Temperance goes back to the very first instructions we learned as an entered apprentice, to learn to subdue our passions. It is very much similar to Stoics' virtue of temperance. It relates to self-restraint, self-discipline, and self-control. It is our ability to choose long-term well-being over short-term satisfaction. Justice. For Masons, justice deals with our rights and obligations towards other people. It means respecting others and fulfilling our obligations to them. It means expressing gratitude toward those who have done us kindness. Justice dictates fairness, honesty, morality, and neutrality in the treatment of all humankind, more especially a brother Mason. The exercise of this virtue motivates us to act towards others in a manner that we would wish they would act towards us. To the Stoics, justice expresses a similar sentiment. Justice for the Stoics is a duty to our fellow men and to our society. It is the morality behind how we act, especially in relation to our community and the people within it. FidelitySt.John's3.com.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and leave us a comment. We enjoy hearing from our listeners. If you really like what you heard, share this podcast with your friends and lodge members. Visit us online at SolomonStaircase.org.